Seth Rance has picked this game up and turned it around in the space of two balls.
This is Through the Pickets, a podcast proudly brought to you by the New Zealand Cricket Players Association, where we showcase our members' interests, achievements and experiences either side of the white picket fence, with more of a lens on their off-field endeavours. Today's episode features a man who has three children under the age of seven. When he isn't playing cricket for Central Districts, he's a builder. And if that's not a full enough scheduled swing bowler and black cap, Seth Rance is the Deputy Chief of the Greytown Volunteer Fire Brigade.
Flicked off the hip and taken. Another one down and it's Clarkson again. Kelly the victim, couldn't resist, and Rance has a third. Got him! There's the five. Seth Rance gets the job done here today. 5 for 19. Equal third best figures for Central in T20 cricket.
Central District swing bowler Seth Rance, welcome to Through the Pickets. So good to have you here and thanks for joining us. Now, Seth, you have a very interesting career, which is not one, but three jobs. You're a volunteer firefighter, a builder, and of course a cricketer, not to mention the host of the Love the Stags podcast. I don't know if that's officially a job, otherwise I would have made it four. So if I can start with the podcast, mate, it seems like a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Dennis. Really appreciate you coming to talk to me. Yeah, it's been an interesting one, actually, delving into a bit of the social media stuff with Margot at the helm. Margot Butcher does a great job for the Stags. And so, yeah, running the podcast's been interesting. AJ Spatel and I, we dive into that every few weeks. So, yeah, it's been great getting around the guys and finding a bit more out about them and while we're out and about touring.
Do you do a lot of prep or do you sort of just let it free flow?
Yeah, I try and let it free flow. It is hard. Obviously, I try and give the guys a bit of a heads up, usually a bit reluctant to come on and until they know exactly what I'm going to throw at them. So, yeah, I like to throw a few curveballs in too, just to keep it interesting and try and keep it jovial too.
Yeah, because you guys have that inside knowledge. When you're in the camp, so to speak, you know what's happening and who bought a lawnmower and who had a bad haircut or whatever's going on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you got a few one-ups on a few guys, so it's a good opportunity to be able to get one in on them. But yeah, if they get wind that something's going to go down, then they tend not to want to go on.
And your reaction when Margot approached you, and she was fantastic, by the way. She writes for our outright. She's been brilliant. Were you reluctant or were you, yeah, sure, I'll do it. Yeah, chuck me the mic on the man.
Yeah, I was a little bit reluctant. I suppose the more I've done of it, the better I feel I've got at it and asking relevant things that people are going to be interested in hearing about. So yeah, to start with, I wasn't 100% sure, but now to work with AJs and doing it, it's been pretty cool.
Okay, the firefighting, how did you get into that?
Yeah, it goes back a wee way. I used to have a neighbour when I was a kid growing up in the fire service and in a small community. When the siren sounds, you drop what you're doing and you rush off. So I kind of always had an interest. If we fast forward to when I was about 15, I decided that was something I wanted to do. You can't join until you're 16. So I said to mum and dad, this is something I want to get into the community. And they said, if that's what you want to do, then you're going to have to take yourself down there and put your big boy pants on and knock on the door and ask to join. So that was the first step. So yeah, when I was 16, I went down there and knocked on the door and there was a bit of a waiting list. And then lucky enough, later on that year, they had a vacancy and they took me on.
So you knew at 16 you wanted to firefight. You rocked on in. You didn't sort of get there and then go, oh, wow, this is a bit intimidating, or there's a huge risk in terms of life risk?
Yeah, I don't think at that age I really quite knew what I was getting into. They looked after me pretty well, obviously being quite young. I just wanted to help the community, I suppose, and that's something that I've always had is, you know, I want to get stuck in and it is at times exciting and that kind of grabbed me as well and seeing the neighbour rushing off and going to help out the community in their time of need. So that was what really grabbed me into it. We've got a really good team here at Greytown and everyone chips in when they need to. And yeah, you don't really mind pitching in when you have to and doing your part, as I say, it helps out the community. And you never quite know what you're going to get.
Now, I've heard you've just been promoted to Deputy Chief.
Yep, I know I have. And the last AGM, long-serving deputy stood down and I put my hand up to take on that role as someone who's a little bit younger and potentially has a long future in the Greytown Brigade. So yeah, I was lucky enough to apply for that and to be appointed. So that's where I sit at the moment, and really enjoying the extra responsibility and what it all brings.
I was going to ask you, what sort of wrapped up in the deputy chief role?
So it's a little bit more around managing the brigade and managing the not at calls as such, probably the equivalent to what a manager does of the cricket team. He's juggling the ins and outs, making sure guys have got gear, being an almost liaison with the community, meeting people, going to events, and making sure that our team is ready to go at a moment's notice and everyone's trained to the skills that they need to. And obviously there's still the element of going to emergencies when you need to.
Seth, how do you compartmentalise the firefighting from cricket? I had a look at the local paper. You're there, you just put out a fire, saved some people's lives, and then you're in your cricket gear, you know, bowling in the nets an hour later.
It can be interesting. There's a few times where, you know, you haven't been to the bestest call, and then an hour later you're going off and playing cricket with the guys. But I seem to be able to leave my fire service stuff at the door as such, and then I can transition into cricket. And it's quite nice being able to have that transition. And it works both ways. If you haven't had a great game of cricket, or you're injured, or it's not going as well, then to be able to come back home to a place like Greytown and change your hats essentially and take your mind off what's going on and focus that energy into something else.
Yeah, you're definitely juggling a few hats, I've got to give you that. Do they ever overlap?
Yeah, I think cricket's a pretty fickle game, and especially in the shorter formats which I play, a day can quite easily turn pear-shaped for you. But, you know, I suppose, and the same with the fire service, you realise at times you're going to go to things, or things are going to happen which aren't ideal, but you mentally prepare for that beforehand and you get on with it. At the time, you go through that experience and you move on and become a better player or a stronger person for it.
Don't laugh at me. I don't know if this is just American television myth. Do you guys actually rescue cats out of trees and I don't know, puppies and, you know, cute fluffy animals?
Yeah, we actually do. And I think I've been to about four in my time in the brigade. We went to one a couple of months ago. Quite an interesting. Yeah. I run the Greytown Fire Service Facebook page, and we had a lady message us saying that the cat was stuck on a roof. But we can't go and respond if a cat's on a roof. It has to be there for a particular period of time, you know, a couple of days before we can risk and put someone on a roof. So we obviously waited a wee while, and then, yeah, we went out and put a ladder up on the roof and got this cat down for the people, and they were very grateful. So, yeah, we certainly, going to fires is only a small portion of what we do. We go to all sorts of things.
Animals and stuff, because they can get very defensive and start going into biting mode or scratching mode. Part of the job?
Yeah, you wear good gloves and a helmet. And the most recent one, the chief actually got up on the roof, and it was quite handy having a good set of gloves on, if you can imagine the rest.
So when you're doing that, do you go through all the full steps? You know, you assess the roof, you have a look, okay, it's a bit rickety, I've got to be careful where I stand.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, one of the things that we get taught as officers is, you know, you weigh every situation up, and your crews and your own safety is the most important thing. So any emergency we go to, that's the most important thing, that you don't get more people in harm's way or injured. So yeah, something like that, you know, it's not worth risking someone falling off a ladder for a cat. So we weigh it all up and use the appropriate equipment.
So there's a fire blazing, you guys rock up. I'm guessing there'd have to be an assessment period where someone goes, right, this is what's happening, bang, bang, bang. Seth, you're doing this, you're doing this. How quick is that process from, I'm going to suss it out, make sure all my crew are safe, to, okay, let's get into it, get the hoses out, let's get this thing out?
Yeah, I suppose that for an officer in the front, your planning starts as soon as the call comes in. So you know what you're going to, whether that be a house fire or something, and then you can start planning in your head from that time, right, what do we need to do? We train regularly in what we need to do in those situations, and the crew in the back know exactly what to do. And then when you arrive, usually you do a 360, so you're going around the incident. And while you're doing that, the guys are getting gear on, hoses out. So yeah, it all happens pretty quick, but we're quite well trained in that process. And everyone's got a high level of training in what to do. So it all kind of blends into one.
And what do you think of the pressure of the hoses?
the first time they turned them on, is there any stitch-ups or anything? Because I could see someone just flying. I know it's all health and safety, so I shouldn't say that, but I could see someone just going, whoa!
Yeah, it has happened occasionally. They are quite strong. And when you see two or three guys on the back of them, you genuinely do need that, especially if you're holding them for a while. So we tend not to try and blow people off their feet, but it can happen. But they are quite strong.
We know you're a builder as well. So how did that come about?
Yeah, it actually links into one. So I joined the brigade. My first crew that I got put into, my officer, was a builder. And I got a family background of building. And I was lucky enough that my first officer in the brigade gave me an apprenticeship straight out of school. And that got me into the trade. And mum and dad, again, some great advice had said, before you go overseas and start focusing 100% on cricket, get a trade behind you. So straight out of school into a trade and apprenticeship, and managed to get that done behind me. Some years of work behind me before cricket really started to take off. So I'm very grateful for having a trade and some handy advice.
So how much has the trade changed since you first started?
It's changed a wee bit. When I first started, we were building new houses, and it was going through the time of the leaky buildings. So there's been a lot of changes there. Also, the health and safety stuff's now, it's pretty intense, slash at times over the top. You can spend half a day setting up some scaffold for a job that'll take an hour. But yeah, there's been some changes along the way. The hard thing for me has been keeping up with those changes because of cricket now being a full-time gig for me, that I need to make sure that I'm still following the right ways of doing things when I do get out on the tools over the winter period.
The building side must be quite handy. So if you do get up on someone's roof, something goes wrong, or you rescue a puppy under someone's deck and you've got to rip their deck up, you can just go change uniforms, come back with with your Makita, put it back together for them.
Yeah, leave the business card. In a small community, like in our brigade, we've got electricians, we've got builders, we've got office people, we've got so many different skills. And again, when you get on a call, they become quite relevant. We go to a power line down, then our electrician can give us some really good advice on kind of what not to do. So yeah, it's quite an interesting dynamic that we all come together with these different skills.
Obviously building's hard on your hands, so are you super careful in terms of your bowling hand, your money maker, so to speak?
Not too much. No, I've got the philosophy where you still got to live life, so I get stuck in over the winter and I just be careful where I need to. But yeah, luckily I've still got all five fingers and two hands.
You haven't put a nail gun through it or anything silly like some of my family?
I have, years and years and years ago. Yep. Yeah, and you do that once. So yeah, I had a mishap with a nail gun. But in my apprenticeship stage, quite nice to learn the hard way sometimes.
Jeez. So before we get to the cricket side of things, if you weren't busy enough, add three kids under the age of seven, as we had a chat sort of before we started recording, and your wife, Suze, who has a hair salon, which you help manage. Mate, time-wise, how do you juggle that? And then, as you said, you put your hand up and went, hey, oh, Deputy Chief's retired, I'll give that a go and take on some more.
Yeah, it is interesting. I suppose if you've got a job to do, you give it to a busy person, and that always seems to fall my way. I do a hell of a lot when I'm home, but I actually really enjoy being busy, and it is a juggle with the kids. This season coming, I've decided to step down from four-day cricket to try and give myself a bit more balance with family time and being at home and start to transition things away from cricket. So that's going to be interesting how that goes. But I really enjoy being busy, and I wouldn't take the things on that I do if I didn't enjoy it, I suppose.
Should I even bother to ask you if you have any hobbies, learning to play the drums, archery, chess, golf, are you into coffee, etc.? I just can't see you having time, but I'll lay it out there. Any hobbies?
I don't have a lot of time for stuff, and my wife will hate me for saying this, but I love curating my lawns at home. It's kind of my little getaway for half an hour every few days to get out there and mow the lawns and tend to them. And I suppose playing on some beautiful parks that I have done with cricket, it's quite nice to try and transfer some of that to home, where I try and replicate what I've just been playing on.
Is it a CD thing? Because Ross Taylor's the same. I don't know if you've seen his lawn. It's perfect.
Yeah, there's a few guys. Yep, there's a few guys in the team. We all talk to each other about it and what sprays we're using and what height you're mowing on. And Ben Wheel is another one who loves his lawns.
Wow.
And we're all members of the New Zealand Lawn Addicts on Facebook. It's quite an interesting Facebook group.
All right, here we go. Let's see if you know your stuff. Best sort of grass, and I've just learned that I've got some prickles in mine. They weren't there before. How do I get rid of them, or do I have to re-sow?
I don't think you can look past the Mitre 10 weed and feed. That there, or your Yates turf spray, does a fantastic job. Gets all the ongi hanga weed out of your lawn, all your prickles and bees and bits and bobs that the kids don't tend to enjoy. But in terms of grass seed, I quite enjoy talking to the groundsmen and asking them. And if you talk nicely enough, you get the odd bag here and there, which is quite nice.
Mate, you do know your stuff.
A tiny bit. I'm no expert. But it's a nice little hobby for me as a bit of a getaway. I can put the earmuffs on and turn the mower on and go for it.
Am I correct in saying that Sue's, your wife, is also very sporty? Apparently she umpired hockey at the top level. And, of course, her whole family has done a heap for hockey in the Wairarapa.
Yeah, they're a big sporting family. They got right into their hockey. Susanna, my wife's umpired NHL, which is the equivalent of kind of your first class stuff. So she really enjoys that. Hasn't done too much recently with the kids, but that's the sacrifice you make. But yeah, certainly we're all pretty sporty and her family's really sporty. So it's nice bringing the kids up in an environment where they're not sat inside, they're out playing around and in the garden.
And it's interesting you said today that the kids have just dived into your new cricket gear and given it a test run, yeah?
Yeah, they have. I was very lucky to receive a big box from Kookaburra this morning, who've been fantastic in sponsoring me over the years. And yeah, the kids are into that now as I'm doing this. So I'll see what they're going to be, where that gear's all gone when I get home.
You show up to the nets with just one pad?
Yeah, that's it, yeah. One glove and the bat's gone missing, but... Yeah, no, it is neat. It's neat to share these things with the kids too.
Obviously at the CP8, life after cricket is big for us. Having that life outside of cricket has been there from the onset for you. Do you encourage any of the younger guys to utilise the PD program?
Yeah, it's thankfully something that a lot of energy is going into now, is what guys do after cricket. And having played for a long time, you can see that guys coming into the setup, they don't have a lot of skills outside of cricket. And, you know, once cricket finishes, you become Seth the ex-cricketer and not a lot of people want to really know you. So it's about, as you go through your career, trying to build, I suppose, a little portfolio of what you can do after cricket and build up little experiences and work experiences and finding something that interests you and then delving into that and deciding once you finish cricket, you know, what options can you go to? What do you have?
So for you, was it something that you knew right at 16 when you went down to the fire brigade that, hey, I'm going to try cricket, but I've also got this happening, or just happened naturally for you?
Yeah, it kind of did just fall my way. I never really thought that I'd ever dream of having a career in cricket. I suppose I'd always been one of the better players growing up and played through the age groups, but there was never really the option of having it as a career in my mind. And that's where I went into my building. And yeah, when I finally got my call up to play for the Stags, it was a bit of a shock that I could get paid to do this as a job. And then it's kind of flowed on from there to getting your first contract and then thinking, wow, this is actually something I can do for 7 months of the year.
So did you get a contract fairly early, or were you getting match appearances and then a contract came a bit later?
Yeah, it was unfortunately I had a lot of injuries when I started. So I had a really good breakthrough season, I suppose you could say, for the Stags. We won the HRV T20 and we went to the Champions Trophy, which was an amazing experience. And then from there, I unfortunately lost a couple of years through injury and didn't get any contracts. And guys like Adam Milne and Ben Wheeler and Bevan Small came through and were playing some fantastic cricket. So I had to kind of start again and build my reputation back up. So yeah, it was a slower start, but in hindsight, it allowed me to get the building finished, to build a life outside of cricket, to find my wife and get married and do all those things. And I'm quite glad how it's all planned out.
Was that your ankle and your shoulder in terms of your injuries?
Yeah, it was. I thought I could be He-Man and throw a ball in 100 metres from the boundary and tore my shoulder. So I had a surgery. And, and then coming back from that, I had a sore ankle and had... pulled the tendon off the bone. So yeah, for 2 years there, I really struggled and wondered if there'd be, you know, a pathway for me coming back. But yeah, a lot of hard work and dedication and a lot of sacrifices, I suppose, has led to me being able to do it full time.
How did you get into cricket, Seth? Do you mind me asking?
Yeah, I've had a family full of cricketers through the generations. So as a kid growing up at home, you know, Dad would come home from work and would be straight out there in the garden and playing. And in a family with three brothers, we all would get out there and have some competitive games. And yeah, that kind of sowed the seed for me that it was a game that I loved. And yeah, lucky enough to be half decent. So as a kid growing up, it was good fun always. It was never a chore and never a bore. So yeah, that sowed the seed at a young age, and it's just carried on from there.
Where do you sit in the pecking order? Are you one of the younger ones that's like, no, you go be wicketkeeper?
Yeah, I was the middle one. So I'm from a family of left-handers, actually. So it probably explains a little bit about the inswing. So I as a kid, I would just bowl and bowl and bowl to left-handers all day. But yeah, we had some great games as kids growing up, and a lot of big arguments. And I'm sure the neighbours heard a lot of appeals and a lot of arguments, but it was good fun.
Any broken windows?
Yeah, there's a few. Yes, yeah, yeah, there was a few. But that's all part of it, isn't it? You know, we're hitting balls around and having good fun. Yeah, those are the great memories, I suppose, as a kid growing up in New Zealand, all the backyards and great summers.
In 2017, at the age of 29, after a brilliant domestic season, 15 wickets, you got called up to the Black Caps. Do you remember how you found out the news?
Yeah, I do. It's quite an interesting story, I think. I'd had quite a few good seasons for the Stags and been the leading wicket taker on and off, and was playing what I believe was my best cricket. And I tend to stay quite neutral, but a lot of people had told me I should have been in the team and why was I not being picked. And I tried to stay out of all of that. And I knew there was this tour to Ireland coming up to play the Tri-Series, and that was my big goal, was to make that. And it was in our winter, so I made sure I kept training, and you know, I sacrificed a lot not going to work and to keep the skills going and training and the off chance that I might get the call. And I knew the selector would be ringing on a particular day, and I happened to be at the nets and bowling my heart out and training and all doing this by myself. And the phone rang and it had Gav Larson on the phone, and I thought, oh, here we go. And the heart's going a million miles an hour. And he rang up and he said, look, and with Gav, you can tell within the first 10 seconds if you're in or out. Anyway, he said, Seth, look, I've got some unfortunate news. We're not picking you for the series, and we're going with another younger bowler, and we see him as someone who's going to play a lot for us in the future. And yeah, my heart sank, and I knew that that was going to be one of my last chances to make a New Zealand team and represent my country from a little place like Greytown. So yeah, my heart sunk, and I hadn't made it. And so I sent a couple of texts out to people who were expecting to hear from me, and I said I hadn't made it. And at that point, I had a decision whether I was going to keep training and finish my net session, or whether I go home disappointed and start pondering what I was going to be doing over the winter. And something made me decide just to keep training. So I got through a few aggressive overs bowling and finished my training and got in the car and went home. And obviously slept on it. Pretty disappointed. I woke up the next morning and at 7 o'clock, I had a text from Gav saying, let me know when I can call you. And I thought, oh, this is a bit unusual. And so yeah, the phone rang and Gav rang up and said, look, we've had a setback and someone's been injured and it's turned into your lucky thing, and we've actually picked you and you're going to be going to Ireland. So that was, yeah, the most amazing news ever, to find out that all the hard work and sacrifice was worth it, and then I was going to be representing my country. And yeah, very, very proud.
So has Gav got some tells, has he? Like, as you said, you know, in the first couple of seconds.
Oh, you certainly do. Yeah, you can tell by the tone of the voice. It's either very upbeat or it's, look, hey, Seth, how are you going? And you kind of know from that moment that that you haven't been successful, but yeah, he certainly hasn't got an easy job.
And you're not one of these guys, obviously, it's like, well, you didn't want me yesterday. Sort of going, yeah. So I'm not coming.
Yeah, well, I suppose, yeah, I was overjoyed to get that call, and it was obviously through someone else's unfortunate injury set of circumstances. But yeah, I was pretty proud to make that team.
And what about first wicket or notable people you bowled out? Remember any of those? I've got them written down in front of me, you see, so I've got a bit of an advantage.
Right. My first couple of one-day games probably didn't pan out as I would have liked. I only got the one wicket in the two games and probably put that down to a little bit of nerves and trying to do too much. I was very lucky to get Chris Gayle was my first T20 wicket. So he came over with high expectations, and in my debut T20 game, I got to bowl to him early on and managed to, Glenn Phillips took a fantastic catch as wicketkeeper, and yeah, get my name on the board with him was an awesome way to start.
I know a lot of bowlers must have this feeling that when you go to bowl to him, it's like, this guy hits me out of the park. This isn't going to look good.
I know. And that particular over too, I think I'd gone for a six and a four and a wide. And then it was kind of make or break. I've got to get him out or this will be me, one game and done. And lucky enough that it fell my way, which was quite cool.
You've had some real success with CD in your career. You've won Super Smash titles, Plunkett Shield, Ford trophies. What's it been like being in that Stags environment? You guys seem like you've got a really good camaraderie.
Yeah, we do. It's something that we always have prided ourselves on. Everyone gets on really well. We all come from different regions. But yeah, when we get together, we have a great time and enjoy it. Taking the cricket aspect out of it, we all get on as mates, our partners and wives and our kids all get on really well. And it's such a great environment, and that probably promotes us playing some really good cricket. And you know, we're pretty lucky to be cricketers and to do it as jobs and travel around these amazing places. So we see having fun is just an important thing, as getting on the park and entertaining with what we do.
Putting a cricket fan hat on here, can I just say I love Pukekura Park?
Yeah, it's an amazing spot to play at, and we get some huge crowds there, and it amplifies too when you get a couple of thousand people there and sitting on top of you basically and watching. It's certainly a daunting place as a bowler. It's not much fun at times, but when you throw in the atmosphere and everything that goes with being in New Plymouth, usually around the Christmas time, it is magical, and it'll be a real shame if we lose that ground.
You've been in the game over a decade. Has it changed a lot since debuting in 09?
Yep, it certainly has. It's become a lot more professional, and quite rightly so. The conditioning and off-field stuff that goes on behind the scenes is massive now, and it is almost a 12-month thing, even though we're only contracted for seven. The expectations that we're training all year round now and putting a lot of work in behind the scenes, where kind of 12, 13 years ago when I started, that wasn't the case. But yeah, it's a lot more global now, obviously, the T20 stuff that's come in. You know, players are playing all around the world, and it's such an amazing thing and creating so many opportunities, not just in the men's, but the women's game as well, to really have it as a career option. So yeah, it's a lot more professional, but it's, I think, better off for that.
Any stories from your playing days? For example, one of your colleagues, Ross Taylor, told us about going to the F1 pits. I think he met Akon as well. Yeah, anything for you?
Nothing really that jumps out. I suppose that I personally been very lucky to travel a lot of places around the world playing sport, which I never ever thought I'd do. There's not a lot of things that I can think of. I suppose as a 20-year-old going to South Africa for the Champions League, that was pretty amazing. And we, having police escorts and the army following you around was always eye-opening. And we even had someone attack the bus with a paintball gun along the motorway, which was, again, straight off the plane, was quite an interesting experience. But having someone with a gun sat on your bus from someone from Greytown was certainly an eye-opening experience. You know, it's pretty cool.
Proudest moment for you? It can be on the park, off the park.
Proudest moment, I think, without a doubt, to represent my country and to pull on that black jersey and to do it from a place like Greytown too. I've really pushed hard our young children and kids playing in the Wairarapa that they don't have to move to these big regions to make their dreams come true. They can do, with a bit of sacrifice and hard work, they can play for a team like Greytown and then end up representing their country. So I'm most proud, certainly, of that legacy that, kids growing up can look at me and say, well, you can do it from here.
Okay, and what's coming up for you in the next wee while? And let's compartmentalise it in terms of the firefighting, in terms of the building, and in terms of the cricket.
Yeah, so the firefighting is always in the background. As I talk to you now, I'm kind of on call, and if something was to happen, then we go to that. We train once a week, so that's always in the background. The building I've put away, the gear's gone in the shed for the summer, which is quite a nice feeling. So yeah, I'm 100% into cricket now, and the Stags are having a really good pre-season training, and up there in Napier, we've been up to the mount, getting ready for the first Plunkett Shield game in a couple of weeks. And for me, it's about getting ready for the first one day at the end of November.
And the headband. I'd be remiss of me not to ask about the headband.
Yeah, yeah.
How did it come about? What's the story behind it?
Yeah, it's interesting that I haven't been blessed with a hell of a lot upstairs in terms of the hair, unfortunately. So I got to a stage where the sweat was causing a bit of an issue, and so the sweatband came out for a couple of games, and it's kind of just clicked from there. I haven't really taken it off, and it is quite an essential bit of kit, especially on these hot days. Margo's trying to get some Stag green ones this year, I think. So we'll wait and see that. Could be a little marketing thing for someone. But a few times I've been thought that it was Chris Martin bowling, not Seth Rance, but that's caused a few jokes along the way.
Seth Rance, thank you very much for coming on Through the Pickets. Best of luck to you and Susanna with the hair salon, the kids, firefighting, building, and of course the upcoming summer of cricket with CD.
Yeah, thank you for having me on, and it's nice to contribute to this. It's a great, certainly, series of podcasts, and I look forward to hearing who's going to be next.
Through the Pickets is an NZCPA production. If you'd like to learn more about what we do and our members, make sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and our website nzcpa.co.nz. If you liked our podcast, please do take a minute to subscribe and give us a 5-star review. I'm Dennis Katsanos, and you've been listening to Through the Pickets.